Johnstown, so it's great to be here. And in fact, I was walking down from the B&B and I got, I think it's a Cork compliment. This fella looked at me and went, "You're interestingly beautiful and beautifully interesting." And I said, "Oh, thanks, I think." but anyhow, I'm happy with it, so I'm going to go with that. So I work with poems, and I also work in Trinity. I teach at the Access Programme, and the first thing I tell my students is that when I was growing up in Finglas, in my house we had 9 kids, and there wasn't an awful lot of room for books. So I didn't grow up with loads of poetry books, but I grew up in a house of song, and there was always great sing songs. So my first poems were songs, and this poem comes from that. The Song Map. Late at night, we hear folks sing of women. Aweelia, aweelia, aweelia. Of men behind bars, gone mad with the jingle jangle of an owl triangle. Da belts out his dream of Joe Hill. Ma keens over the foggy dew. We learn the song map of a small island via the landmarks of mangled hearts. In town, on Raglan Road. Out the country, down by the Sally Garden. Lovely, buckety words, feral tunes, and lonesome airs haunt our heads. We fall asleep, top and tail siblings in rickety bunk beds. So, my dad was a bread man. He delivered bread for butter crust, but his true love was judo, and he was the Irish Olympic judo coach, and he did a bit of bone setting on the side. So when his students dislocated an L shoulder, he could click it back into place. And word got around our estate in Finglas that Charlie Hegarty was doing a bit of bone setting. And when people went out on Friday and Saturday nights and maybe dislocated a shoulder in a fight, they would rock up to our house. And this is memories of those nights when people would come to see me dad, the bone setter. Banjack's men arrive at our house at all hours and in all states. Our father meets them with nothing but a nod of the head. The patient sits on the kitchen table, Dad's hands steeple, soaked in poteen, to twack heat into skin, flesh and blades of bone. Dad raises an arm, hauls the aching shoulder back into place. There is a distinctive click, a shift, a sudden shout. A mended man sits right up. The alphalets share a drop with the hard stuff. Potty is great. So yeah, the dad's gone 20 years now, but he died on the 4th of January, so the 4th of every month, myself and my ma have to go to the graveyard. And if you ever want proof that the Irish are just a bunch of L pagans into ancestor worship, hang out in the graveyard in December. A lot of people in Glaslemon Cemetery bring drink to the dead and have, you know, whiskey or, in some cases, cans of Dutch gold beside their favourite beloved departed. But I actually love the graveyard. I think it's great crack. My ma has a friend called Margaret the Magician, and we call her Margaret the Magician because she can magic cans of Dutch cold even in the graveyard. But she goes with my ma sometimes if I'm working to the graveyard, and Margaret the Magician is quite good at fingersmitting, so she goes over to the crematorium in Glasnevin first, and she robs the flowers that are left inside and then brings them over to her late husband, me da, and then all the graves that are around me da and her late husband, because they might be lonely. So yeah, I love December's in the graveyard, but this comes from December 4th in the graveyard would be Mass. The Mass says heaven is one long, lovely sing-song. Me da is already there, tuning away, humming, and keeping a seat warm for the mother of his 10 kids. December in the graveyard, and there's nothing for it. I close my eyes to listen to what the ma might be hearing. All I hear is a swirl of wind caught in the arms of a yew tree. Ma holds me hand and tells me to hear without listening. Other voices come. The bellow of a man belting out an ode to life. The soft laments of bereft women and lost children. Or the soaring arias of lovers torn and bound again. But everybody quiets for the slow soprano of a young girl singing herself a lullaby into the big, big sleep. Ma says heaven is a lovely, long sing-song. Everybody raises the roof, voices, shy or strong. Wonderful to hear the five-word challenge, and those voices, shy or strong, are feckin' amazing. And I was just saying to me mates, like, that's amazing that they could write those poems in 12 minutes. It takes me, like, sometimes 12 days or 12 years staring out a window to write a poem, so I'm really impressed.
The problem is you're staring out the window.
La la la. Who knows what that ostrich sees with her head in the sand? Speaking of sand. So yeah, I go down every summer to Cork, and we go to my mate's folks' place in Fountainstown. Do you know Fountainstown? Mm-hmm. And it's gorgeous. There's a spit there, and we've been going there basically since we've had kids, because we had this other life before we had children, whereby we traveled around Asia together and puked in every country in Asia. And you know, when I had a great idea leaving Thailand that, oh God, we're going to Vietnam and that's a military country, there won't be any drugs there, I best pack some. So can I just tell you, it's good to have a friend when you sober up on the airplane from Bangkok to Saigon. And she gently suggests, maybe you should take the drugs out of your torch before we get into the airport. So yes. But now we have kids and we're all very responsible. Like, I'm in the fucking parent association. And we hang out, play with our kids on the beach, and then get quietly drunk together while the kids try not to kiss each other. This is from Fountainstown and learning how to build a ship of sand. Ship of sand, Fountainstown. Quick! Let's build a ship of sand to save us from the high tide. Grab that spade the garden trowel, or your granddad's owl shovel. Yes, that child's blue bucket with the broken handles, that will do. Even the dogs get in on the action, pawing away at the sand gutter. Come on, kids, the tall and the small, band together and dig. If all comes to all, cup your hands together and dig. Score out a shape, pitch, pile sand, scoop out a deep moat, shape the bow, the stern, and build up the gunwale. Board the kids. They pick their own sides, starboard or port. Time and tide may be against us, stare down that spit. Still we dig, pitch, pat, meld, and build our ship of sand. We make a madcap tidal boat to while away a summer's day. No matter the waves, no matter the seas lapping, no matter the pull of the moon and her magnetic madness, three mothers and their kids craft out against the high tide. So I have two teenage kids, they're 13 and 14, and they're at that age where I'm an embarrassment on every level. But they're also at an age where one of them has taken to writing poetry, which means that he's reading my poetry, which is very worrying. And I keep telling him, oh no, that didn't really happen, that's poetic imagination.
That won't work for long.
It really won't. So in Finglas there is a lot of travellers, and indeed my own great-grandmother is a traveller. And we would always go down to the Halton site and hang out with the travellers. And sometimes you could borrow a horse and go bareback riding. And that means riding without a saddle. And my 14-year-old recently asked me, I don't think that's about horse riding.
We're in recognition.
Bareback riding in Finglas South. There is a knack when you go bareback, riding a stolen pony to stop you feeling lonely. You wait till after dark to begin this solo lark. You take a length of rope, a sweet red apple, and hope. The chestnut racer stands by the hedge. The council wall is your mountain ledge. Like Eve, you put the apple to his mouth. With hemp for reins, you amble south. By the Talca's river bank, you dig your heels into his flank. And you bolt out of the ordinary. The thing about being a mother of 14 and 13-year-olds, you have young ones coming up to your front door, and they stand there, and like, they're all gorgeous looking, and they're beautiful, and they have that lovely long hair, and they do this with their hair, and they go, "Hi, Cahill's Matt." And I don't know whether I want to kiss them or kick them. So I've decided I'm going to just wallpaper the downstairs toilet with condoms and hope for the best. That's how I'm going to survive teenage years. The husband doesn't think it's a good idea. He didn't grow up in Finglas. So So in Finglas, we have this beautiful observatory that's actually Trinity Observatory, and it's down in Dunsink near the Traveller's site. And we used to go there in December and January, the coldest and darkest times of the year, and we used to break into the emergency exit and go up and see what we could see in the observatory. It's been there since 1783, and I took my kids there legally last December to look at the stars, and they really loved it. But I'm so happy that things like that are still in the city and that they're now open, and all the kids in Finglas all go to the observatory without feeling like they don't belong there, because they do. Being bold at the Dunsink Observatory. It's easy to be bold in an observatory. All you have to do is find the stairs. Each step up into the dark tingles a cold excitement on the back of your neck. Every creak on wood is a suppressed breath. You come to a huge mahogany door, turn a brass knob, and walk into a domed room. You look up, gobsmacked by a revolving roof, and the sky, the massive sky, wide open to you. There's a slip of a new moon and one low, glowing star. Venus shines down on the darkest corners of Finglas. Love that place. It's great. So I lived in America for 7 years. I went to university there at UMass Boston, but I also was very lucky to go to the Harvard School of Education for a year to learn study skills for dyslexics, because I have a different brain than many people. And when I was there, I went to a poetry reading, and Seamus Heaney was reading his book, and I went up to him, you know, with my little book of Wintering Out, and I said, "Will you sign me book?" And he looked at me and he goes, "Where are you from?" I said, "Finglas." He goes, and he's a big smile, and I said, "Do you know it?" And he goes, "I do, I have to drive through it to go to Derry." And I was like, "All right." And I said, "Can I come to your classes?" He goes, "Yeah, you can come." So I blabbed you out, and he was a gorgeous teacher, big smiley head and very gentle. But it was him who told me about Emily Dickinson's house in Amherst. So I don't know whether you remember the old Soundings book, and she was the only woman poet in it. Now, I suppose if you're going to have only one woman poet in a book, Emily Dickinson is a really good way to go. So myself and me fella, who grew a lot of grass, seems to be an ongoing team here, decided that we would go to find Emily Dickinson's garden and like hang out there for ourselves, you know, because that's what you do when you're 21 and off your tits. But my brothers were living in Boston. I've got five brothers, and at the time four of them were living in Boston, and like when they got wind of the word that I was driving like 300 miles to go to a poet's garden, they were like, "Oh, she's really damaged her brain now." So there was a little bit of thing, but it was still beautiful. So this is Emily Dickinson's garden. The brothers think a 300-mile road trip to check out a dead poet's gaff is pure mad. But I'm taken by her well-stock hair pots, the kitchen garden of courgette vines, beans, potato beds with a variety of silence, beak and chipper, Irish cobbler, Castile, white pearl, white rose, and Yukon gold. It might be best to say nothing about me smoking joints with the American fella and sunbathing by a low hemlock hedge. Nor will I ever tell a soul of the wild-eyed ghost in century-old clothes who came and lay the other side of me. They say she's shy. Maria, that poet's as bowed as you please. The cheek of her! She stole my soundings and read her own poems aloud just for me. Stony, broken mouth, I enjoyed the trip. Amherst, the garden, legs curled under a white lace dress, the bride with a book. She showed me how a little bird, a chickadee, stored a seed into a piney bark, storm ready. Thank you. So after I lived in Japan, I came home for a couple of years, and when I was at home, my dad died suddenly of a brain hemorrhage. So in the great fight or flight shite, I flew and fucked off to Japan for 3 years. And I think I thought that I might find my dad, like in the Kodokan in Tokyo or something, playing judo with other samurais, but I didn't. However, I did have a great time when I was there, and had a great time running around Asia. And of course, I did my bit for the United Nations, ride as many nationalities as you can plan. This is where I'm so glad that my husband's not here. There are certain poems that I can only read when he's nowhere near the reading. I had a lovely fella there called Seiji Itagawa, and he didn't speak a word of English, and my Japanese was not the best. And it was one of the least complicated relationships of my life. Whatever kind of row you had, you just shagged your way back to peace if it was finished. There was none of that shite of like, you said this and then I said that and then you said that. The fucking didn't say anything. Anyhow, he wanted to get married, and I could see that there was complications in this plan. I should tell you, after I came back to Finland, after I left, he kept ringing. And in Japan, when you answer the telephone, you say, mushi mushi. But to my mat, this got lost in translation. And every time she picked up the phone, she said, pussy pussy. And one of my ex-Japanese partner did not understand English. He does watch porn, so he can't be. But there were moments of pure loneliness in Japan, and this, I hope, reflects the non-comic side. Rice harvest. The first day of harvest, and he takes me to the family rice paddy. We carefully walk the plank over an irrigation canal, submerge our bare feet into silky mud and warm water. Our toes squelch. His grandmother gives me a sun-bleached hat and new secateurs. Together we set to work in the corners and edges of the paddy, places he can't reach with his grandfather's harvesting machine. The other women are deft. One chop and the stalk comes free. They stoop, bundle, tie, and fan out straw like a girl's party dress. I failed to get the knack of the gash, so they send me off to the drying racks. I carry wide jade stalks and hang them from thick bamboo poles. The sun does the drying work. Hours in the heat, rushes swish under drones of the tractor. I run my fingers along the heavy, beady heads of kernels, small brown pearls and long grass stems cool my sticky hands. The women beckon me to lunch. We sit Zazen style under a green cherry, 1 mile upriver from Lake Shinji. We lay out a picnic on tatami mats, bento boxes, fried tofu, steamed rice, pickled veg, grilled fish, and flasks of miso. I have baked fairy cakes and tell tales of little creatures who appear from mounds of disused bits of farm grounds and cause all sorts of mischief on a land far, far away. He hands me a bowl of miso soup, 2 hands to 2 hands. In a different life, I could have been his wife. I might have learned the different depths of a bow or the language a woman should use with a man who is not related to her. I would have known how to dive deep, gather shellfish, make a soup of aged bean and fresh water clams. Now he gives me food. After the harvest, we drink, and I savor the mystery of miso. A new book coming out on the 17th of May. Nice catch. Oh, thank you. So on the 17th of May, 45 years ago, I was in town with my ma and my little brother, and we were on North Eyre Street, it's just off O'Connell Street, and a bomb went off. One of 3 bombs went off. One went off at 28 minutes past 5 on Leinster Street. One went off on Thomas Street at 5:30, and one went off on Parnell Street at 5:20. No, it's 5:32. So there are 2 minute intervals. And then at 7 o'clock that evening, a diversionary bomb went off in Monaghan Town, so that the bombers who did the bombs in Dublin could drive across the border while the guards all went to Monaghan Town. 33 people died that day, and 267 had life-changing injuries. I just have scars of little bits of glass on the back of my legs, but my mom saw things that day that nobody should ever see, decapitated bodies and dead children. It's the worst day of the Troubles, in terms of you're going to categorise worst as 33 people dead. And nobody has ever been brought to justice, even though there was photo fits of the 3 drivers of the different cars in Dublin, and even though there was a car wreck in Monaghan. There is evidence of collusion with the British Army and the RUC. So 45 years on, justice forgotten, who is funded by the Irish Department of Foreign Affairs, are still waiting to get papers from MI5 that are missing. So I wanted to remember those 33 people, and if you look up history accounts, each of them get 3 little sentences about their lives. So they're like in the footnotes. So what I did was I read those 3 little sentences of the footnotes, and then I wanted to give them back some sense of justice in a poetic form so that they will be remembered. So I'll read 2 of them. Jack Travers, 28, self-employed, single, from Park Street, Monaghan Town. Jack lived with his family and was very athletic. He was engaged to be married, survived by his parents, brothers Jim, and sisters and fiance. Jack was killed on the North Road in Monaghan. So that's his little historical footnote from our Department of Justice. Jack Travers. When we was at school, we learned why place names are given place names. Our house is on Park Street, because ours is the house by the park. And it runs into Hill Street, because that end of the town has a bittering of a drumlin. Market Street is where cattle and livestock roamed on market days. Dawson is named after some rich dead lad. We call it the diamond for its shape. Mill Street, maybe it was an owl flour mill, but sifters and grinders are no longer there. Glasslock Street is but a summer stroll from the lake where Jim and me used to swim. Clover Hill sounds like a good spot for tethered horses and courting couples. Myself and herself once rambled that way. Och, the place was a building site mess. I prefer the old Irish names. There's the Cranoak. It's not exactly Stonehenge. It's a new housing estate, but it lets you imagine what was. Then again, there's a lot to be said for street names that tell you where you stand. Say that North Road. You get what it means. A road that takes you north to the border. Colette Doherty ran a shop in Sheriff Street with her husband. She was 9 months pregnant when she was killed. She was survived by her husband, John, her daughter, Wendy, aged 22 months. Wendy was with her when she was killed and was found wandering an hour later by a neighbour. Colette Doherty. The best thing about my Wendy is her walk. She's so sturdy now. No more waddling her toddle, not a bit of fear. She's well able. It's mad. I'm big belly slow and she's small feet all go. Lately she's taken to orbiting me, making wider and wider circles around her small, small world. I'm still her centre, but she's meeting things for herself, no longer living on me hip. And she started to give lip. No, no, no. No is her favourite word. Even her father gets an earful, and he takes it. Then again at night, she's back to being all mine. Still sleeps between myself and himself. It'll be the crack with the new baby. We'll just have to shove over for one more. I once went to a great concert in Flame, and it was actually Bob Dylan, it was deadly, but the Specials were playing beforehand, and UB40, and the fella from UB40 kept going, "Are you all right down the back?" I loved him. So I'll finish with a love poem. I tell me students, look, if you want to get the ride, you better know a poem off by heart. I know that's why yous are all here. Get the ride. I call it the pedagogy of poetry. And my poetry class has got very popular. this poem is called Lilith, and Lilith is the old Midsummer's festival that we celebrated in Ireland before we became Christians. Lilith, Midsummer's Eve, and we want to walk grass trails. I long for me where in a rare Dublin field. Come here till I show you, husband. Few know about this place. I guide you to the remnants of our local ring fort, a mound of grass, fetch, fern, sticky backs and closed buttercups. Oak trees silhouetted in streetlight. We're hidden and kiss like mad things. Your tongue, our hungry mouths, feel as gorgeous as naked plums. You know what I'm like and you know what I'm after. You lift me up, skyward, spin me and make me dizzy. The phone pings us back to real time in Rahini. Our babysitter's on the clock, and tomorrow there's school. Home, to check on our two sons asleep in the one bed. You load up the dishwasher, I sweep the kitchen floor. A light gloaming, we check the windows and lock the door. Outside, the garden darkens, grows. We go to bed and don't sleep.
Thanks very much.